Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Helles Foundation and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, your weekly look at the Louisiana literary scene. This week I'll be talking with Susan Taylor, the Montine McDaniel Freeman Director of the New Orleans Museum of Art, about a beautiful new book from the museum, Where Art Meets Nature, the Sidney and Walda Besthoff Sculpture Garden. It is such a pleasure to welcome Susan Taylor to The Reading Life. Since 2010, Susan has served as the Montine McDaniel Freeman Director of the New Orleans Museum of Art. Today, we're talking about a beautiful new book from the museum, Where Art Meets Nature, the Sidney and Walda Besthoff Sculpture Garden. Susan, I'm so happy to have you with us.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here. Thank you for having me.
So as it turns out now, you've been with NOMA for about almost half the garden's history.
Exactly.
What do you remember about the early days when you first saw it? What did you think?
Well, I remember when I first came, it was one of the primary reasons I wanted to come to New Orleans. Because
really?
I thought the interest and commitment to sculpture was important and somewhat unique to other museums in the country. And the quality and caliber of the collection was very appealing. I arrived in 2010. The first garden opened just before Katrina and reopened after Katrina. It was one of the first things to reopen in the city after Katrina. And there was an immediate sense of possibility with the garden through Sidney and Walda Besthoff, who were eager to enhance it and make it even better than it was at the time.
It's such an odd kind of job in a way, you know, the job of stewardship, because you know you're taking care of it for a while and you will eventually pass it on to someone else. You know, how do you feel about that?
Well, I feel a sense of responsibility to the garden and to my predecessor, John Bullard, who was instrumental in making the first garden happen, working with Sidney and Walda, and then encouraging them to continue their collecting. But I remember the very first meeting I had with Sidney was in my office, and he told me to write down the names of the artists that I thought would be important to have in the garden. And so I did. And we shared our list, and there was quite a bit of overlap, which made me very happy. And we started adding to the garden then, and then there is this decision to expand it. And it is an awesome responsibility because art is a living part of our lives and changing. So one can only hope that those decisions that you make about what to include have a lasting impact. And
And when you put art in a garden, you add the unpredictability of nature, too. So you have an added component
that
you have to worry about.
Exactly.
So how far out are you able to plan?
Well, when we opened the second garden, we added works to the first garden for the first 4 or 5 years and started planning the second garden thereafter. And we looked at the site as an opportunity to have some site-specific places for work and a place where we could commission work. So trying to find that spot where those two ambitions intersected was really important to us. And we initially planned for, I think it was 38 sculptures in the second garden, and had sites identified for them. But then, you know, as the landscape develops and as plantings show different energies and different colors, you think about other places as well. And then you find a work of art that really has to be in the garden, and you definitely have to find a place for that.
You have to make a place for it if
you have to. You have to make a place for it.
Well, remind us of its humble beginnings. I mean, I remember when I moved to New Orleans, driving past KM Airbnb plaza and thinking, that is one of the most wonderful things I've ever seen. Exactly. And I take such pleasure in it every time I went downtown.
Exactly. The genesis of this passion and interest in sculpture really came when Sidney Bestoff purchased the KMB building. And on its plaza sat a work by Isamu Noguchi, who is a well-known Japanese-American sculptor. And he became intrigued with the work and the work of the artist and sculpture in general, and began thinking about how to place other works on the plaza. And he proceeded to do that. I think John Bullard, who can be incredibly persuasive, convinced him that it would be a good idea to share it more broadly.
Well, I love the way you say, and John Bullard would say every now and then, you know, you really should put this in a garden.
It really belongs in a garden.
And we have a big one.
Exactly. Exactly.
So talk about constructing the garden as a narrative, because it is something that's growing and changing the whole time you're working on it.
It is. One of the interesting aspects of the garden in our early work there was continuing this conversation about between 19th and 20th century works of art. Mm-hmm. So the first garden is primarily 19th and 20th century, and there are some 21st century works sprinkled in, like the Doho Sioux, the work by Anish Kapoor, and some others. And when we started thinking about the expansion of the garden, we realized that this was a moment and an opportunity to focus on the today, the 21st century. Mm-hmm. So there was a very deliberate decision that we made to include artists who were working at this moment in time, and maybe artists who weren't necessarily sculptors, but were thinking about sculpture as a primary medium for them to turn to. So, for example, the work by the artist Sean Scully, which is the Platforms of Color, he primarily has worked as a painter, but decided to explore what color meant outside and in a public space as opposed to inside in a gallery space. And so he began playing with three-dimensional images in that way. So it was a way to celebrate what was happening with emerging and distinguished artists, and also encourage our visitors to look at work perhaps in a different way if they were accustomed to seeing it two-dimensionally, for example.
And it's amplified the mission or the outreach of the museum in unexpected ways, don't you think?
It has. Yeah, absolutely. You know, we're free and open to the public 7 days a week, which is highly unusual for a sculpture garden in the United States. And it was something that Sidney Walda Bestoff felt very strongly about, that we be available. And we are able to welcome visitors who may not necessarily have stepped foot into the museum, but who feel that this is a welcoming, interesting place that encourages looking. Mm-hmm. And so that allows us to imagine what possibilities there were for the new garden. So hence we built an outdoor amphitheater for theater. We have what we call an outdoor classroom, which is a place where we look at the environment and water mitigation. And we have a pavilion, which allows us to feature work inside that relates to the outside. So it opens up all of these different opportunities for us.
Not to mention Tai Chi and yoga and a very, you know, lovely
tai chi
setting.
And yoga is the most restful and, I would say, responsive to place that you can encounter here.
Well, take us to the process. When you decide to add something, how does that begin?
Well, it began with the new garden. That's what I'm most familiar with because I only worked on three or four pieces for the first garden. There's an awful lot of research that we do looking at artists and their capacity for sight, looking at outdoors as a deliberate site for them. So some sculptors just don't work in the landscape. They have to be inside, or they have to be wall-related. So that was something that was important to us. And then looking at the artists who are doing interesting work, like someone like Sean Scully or Anselm Kiefer.
I love that.
We have this beautiful Kiefer. And in nestled in, you know, the landscape. So those were, I would say, opportunities for us to explore, exceptional opportunities. You always look for the exceptional opportunity. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you just happen upon it when you're in a gallery in Chelsea or someplace else. Yeah. And other times you're deliberately focused on the work and the artist that you want. So it's a combination of serendipity, exceptional opportunities, and a lot of research and background.
And you describe going to New York with the Besthoffs and looking at art. Yeah. What a relentless schedule you kept.
Well, it was exhilarating.
Sure.
And it was an opportunity to see art through the lens of a collector. I'm an art historian and a curator, to see it through the lens of a collector and to add in all these other components about, well, I would say criteria that you should uh-huh. use for art in public spaces. And they were very much attuned to that. It was thrilling. It's an opportunity of a lifetime.
So how much progress have you made on your list?
Well, we made...
Or do you just keep adding names?
Well, we keep adding names, of course. But the original list is pretty well fulfilled, except for one artist. And the current list, the absolute current list, was really enhanced by the works that we added to the collection this summer.
If you're just joining us, I'm talking with Susan Taylor of the New Orleans Museum of Art about a beautiful new book from the museum, Where Art Meets Nature, the Sidney and Walda Besthoff Sculpture Garden.
About 6 weeks before we opened the garden, I really felt that we could do something special with this notion of river and mm-hmm. themes. And Maya Lin, who is the artist who did the Vietnam Memorial, had done some work with rivers in the United States. And I really thought it would be an exceptional opportunity if she could work on a project for us for the opening of the garden. So I went to the dealer and I said, do you think that she would do this? Mm-hmm. And immediate response, yes, she'd be happy to be part of the garden. And so within very short order, the project was underway and she came down to install it because she understood that it was an important component to the garden. So that was a big check off my wish list.
So talk about this big, beautiful book and putting it together, because it is... I don't know. It just makes you so... It's a bold book.
Thank you.
You know, yeah. I love the way it looks. It's, you'd pass your coffee table and you're drawn to it immediately.
I'm glad to hear you say that. Yeah, it is. We wanted something that spoke to the present and the future, to the ambitions of the Besthoffs and to the aspirations of the museum to make this a world-class garden. And we found amazing partners in Monticelli Press, which is a segment of Fiden. The CEO, Keith Fox, is in love with New Orleans, here, has a place here, and is in love with the garden. And so when he found out we were celebrating 20 years and that there were all sorts of possibilities to highlight the garden and the fact that we needed a catalog because we only had the catalog from Sculpture Garden 1, he was eager to work on it with us. And this was a labor of love, not only for the press, but also for every single member of the staff who participated in this. The photography is extraordinary.
Oh, it is.
The editing, all aspects of this book have been touched by many, many members of the staff.
But talk about the book design.
Well, it is a very, very much a today book, as you said. We wanted to create this bold opportunity to highlight what can only best be seen in three dimensions. So we wanted to approximate that experience with the book. So the cover of the book is a cutout of the sculpture by Ugo Rondinone, mm-hmm. who's in the garden. And it sort of teases you into the book.
It's so inviting. It is. It just is.
It is. It does. It teases you into the book, makes you open the cover. And then the combination of, well, all color and full page bleeds mm-hmm. leads you on a journey through the garden as if you're walking through it. And I think that's what we wanted to do. Also, we decided to put the artists in alphabetical order. This is something that we thought a lot about. We put the artists in alphabetical order as opposed to in order of acquisition or whether they were in Sculpture Garden 1 or Sculpture Garden 2. So that lends itself to a conversation between works that might not necessarily have been in conversation before. Mm-hmm. And that was just an important component of the decision. And I think it was the right one, although I wasn't sure in the beginning. And then the sections that are divided by color, again, create your visual chapters as well as literal chapters, but visual chapters that allow you to kind of move through the book in a very deliberate way. And they make you stop. I mean, after each color section, you look and there's a full page bleed.
So talk about some of your favorites. I know that's hard to choose.
It is hard.
Or your favorite spot in the garden?
Well, I'd say some of my favorite spots in the garden are places where you can stand and look across the vista. So on the bridge. Mm-hmm. In Sculpture Garden 2, where you're looking across and you see the Ugo Rondinone piece and the work by Ursula von Reidingsvard and Katerina Frisch's skull on the island and the Sean Scully stacked colors and Larry Bell's cube, red cube. That, to me, is just epitomizes, I think, the ambitions for the garden that we had to create mm-hmm. these moments in the landscape where artists sit, where their work sits in harmony. And I think that was a really important part of what the garden should be. And then we added this summer three works that I'm incredibly excited about. The work by Elm Green and Dragset of The Young Boy on the Diving Board. That is entitled Maybe Parentheses Not. And it talks a lot about choices, making choices, youthful choices, uncertainty about our future, and yet an eagerness to consider it. We cited that work so that it would lean over the bayou so that it looked like the boy would be diving into the water. And it works really beautifully. And it's become a favorite of a number of people. And then the other work, which we commissioned that went in September, was a work by the artist Sarah Z and is embedded in the landscape. As Walda pointed out, she felt that that section of the garden needed finishing. It needed a punctuation at the end. Sure. And that really did it for us.
If you're just joining us, I'm talking with Susan Taylor of the New Orleans Museum of Art about a beautiful new book from the museum, Where Art Meets Nature, the Sidney and Walda Besthoff Sculpture Garden. You have a wonderful description in here about what happens when a sculpture arrives. Yes. I wish you'd talk a little bit about that so people can imagine, you know, what happens behind the scenes.
It's quite a undertaking. We work closely with a company that, American Machinery, that brings the works in on a flatbed truck and loads them up and hoists them often over the fences around the garden. And then they're kind of suspended in air for a period of time as we try to find the right site for them, the right positioning, and they're gradually lowered onto the bed or the prepared site for them. It takes a long time.
Because your heart and your throat the whole time you're
absolutely
doing that.
Absolutely. And also the men from American Machinery who help us with this are so incredibly responsive to the delicacy of the work and to the importance of siting it properly. And they're just incredibly respectful of the work and the process. And so mm-hmm. it feels like something truly remarkable has been accomplished once it goes in. And this takes hours. Several hours. So it's a process, but it's thrilling.
How many people come to the garden every year, do you think?
Well, we did our last count about 200,000, mm-hmm. I would say. And probably many more because our count is approximation only.
Sure.
But I would say over 200,000 come to the garden.
What is your great hope for the garden in the long run?
My hope is that it continues to feel integrated into this city as an important part of the cultural fabric of the city. In New Orleans, we talk about destinations. You know, there's a whole conversation around destinations in New Orleans. And I do think the garden has become a destination for a number of people. Our international visitation is quite impressive, and it's becoming more and more well known locally because of the international impact. So it's interesting that follows. And I want it to be used as fully as possible. You know, we have this outdoor amphitheater, and right before Thanksgiving, we had a film in the amphitheater, and it was one of those magical evenings where kids were running around and, you know, parents were sitting watching a movie and talking to one another, and it was magical. So I'm hoping that the ways in which we can use the garden will continue to increase. And I also hope that my goal is obviously to keep it free, because it's an important component of the offerings that the city has for visitors.
So where do you go if you're going in the garden to look at a piece of art? Say you've had a bad day. What piece do you go look at? Or if you've had a really good day?
I think my new favorite is the Elm Green and Drag Set. The boy on the diving board. That just gives me great pleasure and makes me smile. Mm-hmm. On a more contemplative moment, I would say sitting with the Ugo Rondinone, the gold circle, just lets you sit with it in the landscape. And then I really also appreciate the work by Doho Su.
I do too.
And that to me is, you know, it gives you a sense of infinity and what
describe
and possibility.
That. Would you describe it?
It's an image of men seated one on top of the other until they gradually recede, both in height but also in size, and in ever diminishing sizes, so that at the end of it appears as if they've disappeared into the sky and into space. And it's such a contemplative piece because you're looking at this motion, which isn't really motion. It's just you glancing your eye over this sculpture, and makes you think about infinity and timelessness. And that is thrilling and also kind of frightening sometimes.
But also can make you think the garden will always be there. That's you know?
That's absolutely right. You're right. I agree. Yeah.
I hope so.
Yeah. It will be.
I would like for both of us to be right about that.
We will. We are. We will be.
We've been talking with New Orleans Museum of Art Director Susan Taylor about the beautiful new book, Where Art Meets Nature, The Sidney and Walda Besthoff Sculpture Garden. Susan, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Susan. It's been a pleasure.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. The Garden District Bookshop presents Mardi Gras Story Times, Saturday, January 18th. At 11 a.m., Abby Roniger presents Carnival Time in My Mind. And at 1 p.m., Monica Von Flam presents a sing-along, The Wheels on the Float. Daniel Black discusses and signs his novel, Isaac's Song, Saturday, January 18th at 4 at Baldwin & Company. The Crush Tour comes to Blue Cypress Books to celebrate the release of two new romance novels, Earl Crush by Alexandra Vasti and Zoe Brennan, and First Crush by Laura Piper Lee.
That's Saturday, January 18th at 6 at Blue Cypress Books. Roger Kamenetz hosts a reading in conjunction with the art show NOLA Expressionism, curated by Moira Crone, Sunday, January 19th from 7 to 9 at the Second Story Gallery in the New Orleans Healing Center. Featured readers are Andy Young, Gina Ferrara, Anya Kamenetz, Jonathan Klein, Jonathan Penton, Rodrigo Toscano. Tyler Merritt discusses and signs his new memoir, This Changes Everything, a surprisingly funny story about race, cancer, faith, and other things we don't talk about. Tuesday, January 21st at 6 at Baldwin & Company. This is a ticketed event. Writers Kayla Min Andrews, Maurice Carlos Ruffin, and Mary H.K. Choi, the 2025 recipient of the McDowell's Catherine Min Fellowship, discuss and sign the paperback edition of The Fetishist, the final novel and the first posthumous publication by Penn Bingham Prize finalist Catherine Min, who is Kayla's mother. That's Tuesday, January 21st at 6 at Octavia Books. Jonathan Penton and Unlikely Stories present Unlikely Saints, readings by Joanna Furman, Adina Karasik, Sky Jackson, and Carolyn Hembry, Tuesday, January 21st at 8 at the Twilight Room of the Always Lounge. Juanita Tolliver discusses and signs A More Perfect Party, the night Shirley Chisholm and Diane Carroll reshape politics, Thursday, January 23rd at 6 at Baldwin & Company. This is a ticketed event. Sharon LaCour discusses and signs The Meeting of Air and Water, Thursday, January 23rd at 6:30 at Blue Cypress Books.
Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Hellis Foundation, the Jefferson Parish Public Library, and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in The Reading Life do not necessarily represent those of the National Endowment for the Humanities. The theme song for The Reading Life is by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by George Ingmeyer and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at wwno.org. And you can email us at thereadinglife@wwno.org.